This is FNX.
Listen to Shoot the Defense. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Hello and welcome to Shoot the Defense on FNX. I'm your host, Del. I thought the Tuesday or Wednesday show was going to be our last of the year, but then I forgot that there were games this weekend. Shows how much of a football connoisseur I am. I'm joined once again by Rodri Giggs, Yanakis, and the returning Robbie Richmond with a big grin on his face being a Liverpool fan. How are you doing, Rob?
I'm all right, mate. Nice to talk to you all. Nice to see you. And Happy New Year to all our listeners.
Yes, Happy New Year indeed, mate. Happy New Year. Rod, you good?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. Thanks. Yourself?
Yeah, all good, mate. All good. After good. Today's win, I can't be happier at the moment.
Yeah. Jan's happy as well.
So. Yeah. Yeah. He's grinning like a Cheshire Cat as well. Blimey.
Yeah.
It makes a change.
There you go. You're right then, Jan. You okay?
Yeah, I'm good, mate.
You're not feeling sensitive today, are you?
I'm always sensitive, mate.
Tart. You tart. Right, okay, let's talk about the Premier League games because I don't think much happened in Europe, so we'll go right into the big one. Liverpool 5, Arsenal 1. Bobby Firmino grabbed the hat-trick. Mane, Salah from the spot. All of this was after Arsenal took the lead, which was completely against the run of play. Rob, I know you were on Chig's Arsenal show the other day. I wanted to ask you this. It wasn't a matter of if Liverpool were going to win. It was going to be a matter of how much they're going to win by. Is that how you felt?
Yeah. The long and short of it was yes. I was very confident that we could beat Arsenal. They have a terrible record at Anfield. But curiously, I did say when I was on Chris's show the other day that if you've got the best thing you can do is come out and attack us and give it a go in the first 20 minutes. Which they duly did and scored a really lovely goal from Maitland-Niles. We have this tendency to be a bit jittery in the first sort of 15-20 minutes, and it's not like, you know, despite our record currently, it's not to say that you can't get at us. But yeah, by and large, it quickly became a very pedestrian result once the little blitzkrieg of two goals in 2 minutes just absolutely took all the wind out of their sails, thanks to Bobby.
Yeah, that's right. And I was really fascinated by Jurgen Klopp's tactics because I noticed that while the fullbacks kept bombing forward, which is something that we're used to seeing, it was only Wijnaldum and Fabinho that sat in front of the two central defenders, and they rarely crossed the halfway line, really. Shaqiri played that position in the hole. He was drifting left and right. The front three were interchanging. It was absolutely fantastic, but Arsenal's defending once again was their undoing, wasn't it? It was absolutely dreadful.
Yeah, it's when you look at it from a perspective of as a neutral, they've obviously rushed Mustafi back and he's nowhere near ready. Came off at half time. Koscielny, you know, had a terrible, terrible injury to his Achilles and will probably never be the same player that he was. Lichtsteiner, I understand why they bought Lichtsteiner. On paper, it looks a very sensible acquisition, but the difference between playing in Serie A and playing in the Premier League is about, I'd say, some of the region of about 60 miles an hour faster. And Sokratis is very physical, but he's not very good on the turn. He's a solid 7 out of 10 kind of a defender. And when you don't get that 7 out of 10 performance out of him, it's often a 3 or a 4. You know? He's been pretty consistent for Arsenal this season. But when he has a bad game, he has a really bad game.
Yeah, absolutely. And Sokratis, I described him as the Greek Phil Jones, and I've taken a few pelters, but he did absolutely nothing that day to prove me wrong. And Rod, I mentioned Liverpool's front three. We've spoken so much about them in the past. There was so much movement. They were swapping roles, swapping positions. We saw that with United, with Tevez, Rooney and Ronaldo. From a tactical standpoint, how do you defend against it, mate?
It's difficult. You've got to be as compact as possible, but it's difficult when they're interchanging the moving and the speed of them, and you know it's very difficult. But you try and stay compact as possible, not diving, and try and defend as best as possible. But you know, it's like you were saying before, Arsenal were all over the show, and when defence is not up to scratch, and Liverpool are firing all cylinders like that, then you're going to get the scoreline that you got.
That's right, and Firmino hasn't really been scoring this season in the league. I think he only had one before.
Those were his first goals since April at Anfield.
There you go. But that second goal, he put both those central defenders on their asses, mate. Again, the footwork was immense. The finish was outstanding, and that effectively killed the game. I think that destroyed Arsenal's confidence completely.
It brought out the old ghost of Wenger all of a sudden. All of a sudden, all you can see is like, oh yeah, we've been here before. This is, Arsenal are obviously very much a work in progress, and they have made progress this season under Emery, and anyone that says otherwise is frankly wrong. But you are always going to test yourself against the other big clubs. They were absolutely tremendous when we played them at the Emirates, and we were lucky to get a draw, to be honest with you. But this weekend, it looked like a game too far. They've obviously got some huge problems with injuries, and it shows. And yet, you know, Aubameyang, did you see the statistic going around that Aubameyang tucks the ball 6 times in the first half, and 4 of them were to kick off?
Yeah, it was 7, but you know, it doesn't matter.
Something like that. Yeah. Hey, listen, that's just not good enough. Now, as I said, they had the opportunity. They had a really good first 10 minutes, and then they literally they just couldn't get the ball. They're keeping a compact shape, as Rodri said, and he's correct. But there's so many drifting runners going past them, and they just couldn't cope. They just couldn't cope. We're just smothering them, absolutely smothering them.
Yeah, I can't remember how many touches he had in total. But I think again the lack of Lacazette, pardon the pun, hurt Arsenal a bit, because you know, let's be 100% honest. I think he's their only natural goal scorer. I know Aubameyang has got bags of goals this season, and that kind of blasts my theory out of the water. But in terms of an out and out striker, Lacazette is their main man. And for Emery not to go with him again, it baffles me.
Yeah, I mean. Alex Iwobi had, I'm looking at some of the stats now. Alex Iwobi has 2 chances created in the first half, one of which is a goal. But their numbers in the attacking third are just, they're absolutely negligible. They've barely got the ball in that area. And it's funny how, again, I refer to the game that we played at the Emirates, that it was one of Fabinho's first games in a big game. And he sat far too deep, and he gave Torreira and Xhaka a lot of room to work in the right areas of the pitch, you know, where you're picking up the ball and you're able to do something creative with the ball, but also do it accurately and quickly. And what we saw yesterday was the reverse of that, that Shaqiri and Fabinho, Gini Wijnaldum, and Bobby Firmino, we're all picking the balls up in areas where they can play it quick, they can play it efficiently, and they can cause trouble. You got Robertson coming down the left. The engine on that guy is just unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. I cannot believe it. I am also worried, though, that it'll be burnt out by the time he's about 27. He just goes and goes and goes and goes and goes. It's astonishing. Astonishing to me.
Yeah, I think under Jurgen Klopp at Dortmund, was it that the fullbacks had like 10 kilometres of running a game or something ridiculous?
Yeah, on average it was something like that. And I know, like, we've talked about this a lot, Stal, over the last couple of years, and he's augmented the way that he plays, and he's adapted it to how the Premiership is. And it's that thing where, as you know, Stal, I absolutely love Gini Wijnaldum, and he's not able to do the things that Mascherano can do, and he's not able to do the things that Gerrard can do, and he's not able to do the things that Xabi Alonso can do, and yet everything he does is 95% spot on in a game. He's just so incredibly consistent in what he does, and he's absolutely fantastic at taking and making the right decisions.
Yeah,
it just helps with the tempo of the way that we, just the tempo of the way that we play. It's a big catalyst for getting things started really, really quickly.
Yeah. Well, look, Piszczek used to cover up to 12 kilometres of ground per game, which is ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. But you know, you must be absolutely buzzing. I'm not going to ask you if you think you guys can win the league, because I know you probably don't want to jinx it. But at the same time,
listen, honestly, I'll be honest with you, and I'm not counting any chickens, because we've been here before. I still vividly remember that 08-09 season. We got 86 points. We were 4 points behind Man United. United won the trophy, and they lost two more games than us. So I'm not taking anything for granted. I still think we're going to need 90, not maybe even 95 points. I still think City can get 95 points. If we're able to get a win on Thursday night, I will feel a lot better. But in reality, we, you know, let's face it, a couple of injuries and we're in big trouble. Because we, you know, we're literally down to our last two central defenders at the moment, and there doesn't appear to be a lot going around about buying anybody else either, even on a short-term basis. So, and we know how important Virgil is. We know our goalkeeper has been fantastic. If, you know, let's say he gets a red card, and we have to play Mignolet for a couple of weeks, anything could happen.
Yeah, true.
So I don't worry too much about Mo Salah. I don't worry at all about any of our midfielders, because you can bring any of them in and they'll do a great job. But you do worry about, you know, what has become the core of our team. If we lose one of them, maybe even two of them, we could be in big trouble.
Absolutely. Well, that win means Liverpool are 31 games unbeaten in the Premier League, which is an absolutely ridiculous stat. When we talk about teams without a home or a home ground, it's Spurs, and they lost 3-1 to Wolves, Jan. They went a goal up, and then it just went downhill the moment Wolves equalised. It was just one of those games, and Pochettino said that his team aren't machines. So I don't know whether he's suggesting that, you know, fatigue is starting to creep in, but you know, Wolves' second half was absolutely phenomenal. That's the best second half display I've seen all season.
Yeah, I agree. Still. Maybe it's the fact that what we touched on, Tottenham's squad or the lack of, you know, numbers, you know, especially in this period where games are coming thick and fast, might have paid dividends. But I don't think it's an excuse for Tottenham this week, because the run that they were in, the players that were on form, the results that we were getting, the goals that they were scoring, to be honest, I don't think anybody saw this result coming. So, you know, I'm not going to excuse them this time. You know what I think about Tottenham and how they conduct themselves, which I think they're really good. But at the end of the day, if you're going to challenge for a title or win a title, is these kind of games that you need to pick up 3 points. As for Wolves, I think they've been a breath of fresh air for this league. The way that they've come up, they've spent money wisely. Nuno Espirito's got them playing in his kind of style. The players seem to be following his philosophy, and to go away to Tottenham at Wembley, 1-0 down for a team that's going for the title or challenging for a title, to come away with 3 points in the manner that they did, I think Wolves deserve a lot of credit.
And Rod, Spurs didn't have any ideas in that second half. I was watching that game and they really, really struggled to break down Wolves. They got hit on the counter-attack. I know Pochettino is, you know, really good with his words, and you're saying things like, you know, we played too many long balls and our energy dropped in the second half. We'll go back to the old adage where, you know, possibly they should have strengthened in the summer. We don't know if he's going to get any money to spend in January. Where does that leave them this season? Because, again, it's another Spursy performance.
It is another Spursy performance, but, you know, you've got to give credit to Wolves. You know, they give problems to Man City. They give problems to Liverpool. So they're no mugs, and even though, you know, on paper Tottenham should win that game, you know, they're 1-0 up. Maybe instead of going for two and the third, they've sat on that, and then Wolves have got them on the break, and then they've got them got a couple of goals later on, which can happen when you're trying to go for the winner. So yeah, it's a difficult one when they've spent such a good couple of weeks. They've got back in the title race, and then one really on paper that everyone expects them to win and lose. So it's a difficult pill to swallow, but you know, it just proves that they do need to strengthen a couple more players, because you know it's the squad's thin and you do need that quality and depth.
Absolutely. Well, look, Jean Moutinho came on. He did really, really well. You know, Willy Bolly got the man of the match award, but you know, Doherty, the fullback, this guy, he came in, cost him $75,000, and he's been absolutely phenomenal. He's been my right back of the season. What do you make of him,
Rob? Agree.
I watched him the week before against Liverpool, and I thought he was a class apart. Really, in a Wolves team full of very good players. He's a fantastic find for them, an absolutely fantastic find.
Jan?
No, I agree, mate. I think the way he's defended, first of all, this season has been great, but I've been more impressed with the way he's been going forward. He's a threat from corners as well. I think he's got 2 goals already this season, hasn't he? I think he scored away at Cardiff and he scored away somewhere else. I think he's got 2 goals already. He gives Wolves a lot of width on that right-hand side. His energy level seems to be good. No, I agree with you. I think he's been the best right-back this season in the Premiership.
Superb. Rodri, Mitrovic. We've spoken about him before in the past, being the one of the best goal scorers in the league, apparently, according to someone. He got the winner for Fulham against Huddersfield. I don't know where this leads Huddersfield now, mate. They're 5 points away from 17th. It's not looking good for them at the moment, is it?
No, it's not, because they're not scoring goals, and if you're not keeping clean sheets as well, then you're definitely in trouble. Last year, their home form saved them, and that's not great this year. So yeah, I think it does happen when teams seem to do well in the first season. They always seem to struggle in the second season, and we've seen that with Huddersfield, and you know, with Cardiff doing so well, and. And Fulham, we're picking up games here and there. It's for me, it's down to Fulham, Huddersfield, and then you can pick 3 or 4. But I think Huddersfield and Fulham will find it difficult, even though Fulham come away with 3 points.
And Jan, I know there was a little bit of a spat between Kamara and Mitrovic about the penalty. Ranieri said he didn't respect me, the club, the teammates, and the crowds. You know, he said he wanted to kill Kamara. We saw it with Benteke a couple of seasons ago. Was it last season, actually, wasn't it?
With Milojevic at Palace, wasn't it?
Not a good sign when you've got players arguing to take a penalty, especially when they're down at the bottom.
No, it's not. And, you know, I'm pretty sure Kamara would have known that Mitrovic was the designated player to take the penalty. So for him to pick up the ball and argue as he did, you know, was a little bit weird, to say the least. Now, if he's going to do that, which he won the argument, then he's got to put the ball in the back of the net. He's got no other choice. Now, to be honest, I'd be very surprised if he plays the next game, Kamara. I think Ranieri might be one of the managers who's going to prove a point, as in no one's bigger than the club or the manager, etc. I'd be surprised if Kamara finds himself in the starting lineup in the next game. And, you know, to save his blushes, Mitrovic got the winner in the 93rd minute, which was vitally important for Fulham, but as Rod said, I don't see Fulham or Huddersfield staying up this season. You know, Huddersfield don't score goals, and they concede, and Fulham, yeah, they score, but Fulham concede a bundle, so I think them two will go down.
Yeah. What about Burnley then, Rod? Because they dropped Joe Hart today, they put Tom Heaton in goal, gave him the captain's armband, and they won. They won 2-0.
Yeah. Sean Dyche is safe for another week.
No Kabaddi football there.
No, yeah, it's a good result for him, you know. They've got 3 decent keepers there, so, you know, he's got the choice to do that. And if any of them slip up, then he's got a choice to do that, because he's a manager and he's paid to do that. But, you know, he's obviously been vindicated with a 2-0 win and a good 3 points. And hopefully, this the springboard now that them to get a few results under the belt.
That's right. And Rob, West Ham, they've lost 2 of their last 3 Premier League games. Not a good sign, is it?
No, it's that thing as well with Pellegrini's side that you've seen before. You've already seen it with Pellegrini at West Ham. It's a growing pains thing where they'll look really, really good and they'll look really, really bad, and there doesn't seem to be any sort of middle ground. They had a lot of yellow cards. It was a very physical game. They had 4 yellow cards today against Burnley. So they knew that they had to go there and go for a fight. Anderson's been great, but he's also been a bit inconsistent. And you can't... They're a difficult side to try and pin down at the moment. It's hard to see... Like, you can see where they need to improve, but when you've got a lot of young lads on the, you know, on the periphery of the squad, and you've got a manager in Pellegrini who is willing to give them a bit of a crack, you have to be willing to accept that some of these young lads are going to make mistakes. What would frustrate me if I'm a West Ham fan is that away from home they do seem to be really, really. I don't want to swear, but...
Go for it.
Yeah. No, I really don't. They're just really, really frustrating to watch. They just seem to be... At home, they're pretty strong. At home, they look like they get the crowd behind them, they're geared up for it. But away from home, like, they seem a lot more leggy, they seem less willing. I don't say things like that lightly about professional footballers, but they just don't seem to have anything in them when they're away from home. They don't seem... It's really hard to pin down exactly what it is that's wrong. They are.
To refer to them, Rob, at the moment, they've got a lot of injuries. West Ham.
Yeah, they do. They do. And as I said, they're playing a lot of young lads, you know, or youngish lads. But as I said, they're a work in progress and they're neither here nor there. You know, they are a middling Premiership club. And to be fair, again, this is just to talk about Burnley, lads. This is probably the third time in a month that the Burnley players have kept Dyche in a job. You know, it really is like you can't say they're not battling for him. They're not very good to watch at all, and they never have been. Let's be honest, but they're keeping him in a job barely.
Well, six defeats in their last 7, mate. I mean, that's
yeah. But every time, you see what I mean, though. Like every time, yeah, but. Like they played against Liverpool and they lost, but everything that was said about them was, oh yeah, but it was a hard working performance and they gave it their all and all those kind of platitudes that we hear time after time. And well, yeah, they've had a bad run, but I think Dyche is probably coming to the end of it. He's just been at that club for too long, you know. He's just been there too long, and it's that shelf life thing, and they need a different voice in the dressing room, and they. The problem is, of course, that Burnley will go straight to somebody like Sam Allardyce or Alan Pardew, and David they'll just Boyce. Say the exact same things in a slightly different accent.
Fair point.
You know what? I find it all mind-boggling. You know, listening to your chat before we come on, and you know, this is Burnley and this is Bournemouth. Where the managers have took these teams is quite frankly unbelievable. Their mandate with the start of the season was keep us in the Premier League. That's what's going to happen. What do you want them to do? He got in Europe last year and Eddie Howe got Bournemouth. What do you want them to do?
Yeah, but you know, Rod, with Eddie Howe, my main gripe is all these people who are in the media saying that he should be lined up as an Spurs manager, and I don't see.
Yeah, but that's a different debate. But that I'm talking about. Sean Dyche is thinking about losing. It's just mind boggling. It's Burnley. He got in Europe last year. He can't be a bad manager overnight. We've seen it before when he play in Europe on the Thursday nights. It affects teams, and they've not recovered from it. So
that's completely valid, and I agree with you 100%, to be honest with you. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it's fully valid. But somebody at Burnley will be going, hang on a minute, if we go down, it's a disaster, you know. And you have to ask that awkward question. I appreciate that the bloke's a legend at that club. No one's going to disagree with that. Of course he is. To get them into Europe was a phenomenal overachievement. But at some point in the next couple of weeks, someone's going to be asking that awkward question about whether or not he should stay or if he should go. And that's, you know, you can't stay in the job because you did a brilliant job last season. You have to move on. And the argument I would make in Dyche's defence is it is very difficult to try to inspire players to come and play at Burnley. He's after a specific type of player with regards to skill, ability and attitude. And I think that's really, really difficult. I can't tell you how much money they've got to spend on players, but I can tell you that the players that they brought in, you know, why are you bringing in Joe Hart when you've already got Tom Heaton and Nick Pope? Admittedly, Nick Pope is now injured. But why are you, what does that say to you when you're basically undermining two of the best English goalkeepers in the Premiership that both happen to be at your club?
Rob, I think both
but
of those...
But as a manager, you've got to think to yourself, you go to the chairman and think, well, I've got one keeper injured, I need a keeper. We've got a chance here to buy an England international goalkeeper that, you know, I might have a problem when the other one gets hurt, but right now we need to fix this problem. The managers don't care about what you've just mentioned there. They just want to fix that problem. They fixed it with a top-class goalkeeper.
I would debate whether or not he's a top-class goalkeeper anymore.
He's certainly been a Premier League goalkeeper.
I think what I'm kind of referring to is like, you and I know from experience about it only takes one signing that can throw a lot of noses out of joint. I just think I understand exactly what you're saying, and it's a fully valid argument. I just think if you're going to spend money on players, a lot of money on a player, I'm not sure that what I'm trying to say is that Burnley have bigger problem than a goalkeeper. You know, in terms of having a different option to everything that they have. Like, they have a lot of forwards that are all very samey. You know, they don't have a plan B with regards to trying to throw somebody on that's really, really quick, a fox in a box. Listen, that being said, they're not knocking around as much these days either. It's really, really hard. As I said, I think Burnley have a massive challenge in trying to recruit players that fit the system generally that they play.
The thing is, Rob,
it's nothing to do with this, but I think it's about the money, and they haven't got the money to spend. They spent about 15 million on Chris Wood, which is like, you know, okay, he scores a couple of goals, but he's not a Premier League goal scorer.
They
haven't got the money.
That's what I'm trying to say, I think.
That's why Sean Dyche is doing a brilliant job, because he's got limited funds and he's keeping them in the Premier League, which would be his mandate at the start of the season. Yeah. Not to reach Europe, which he did last year, by the way. Not, but just to stay in the Premier League, which he will do. They will not get relegated.
Yeah, but the thing is, gents, it's like, the way I see it is, when teams or managers overachieve, there's always this high level of expectancy the following season. I'll give Leicester as the prime example. They won the league. No one thought they'd win the league. No one in their right mind thought that they would win the league. But as soon as results started to drop, or performances started to drop and the results weren't coming, they sacked Ranieri. I mean, they sacked the guy that guided them to winning the league, for Christ's sake. So I don't think that Sean Dyche is safe yet, because they're still in that bottom three. I don't think the Burnley board are looking at the league position and saying, well, we got into the Europa League last season, so we'll give them a bye. I just think that a few more bad results, and if Southampton start winning, even though they lost today, if Southampton maintain their form and they start, you know, pulling away, and Cardiff ain't doing too badly, which we'll touch on in just a moment, I think the pressure will be even higher on Sean Dyche, and eventually they will pull the trigger, because they're going to panic, like a lot of chairmen do.
That's what worries me. Don't get me wrong, I don't want him to get sacked. I don't want him to get sacked. But at the same time, we all know how this book ends, lads. We've all seen this story before. And I agree with Roderick. I don't want Burnley to go down. I would be delighted if Cardiff went down, because I don't particularly like Warnock as a man. But it's just that thing where they could get caught into this trap. Like I said, they massively overachieved last season. They could get caught into this trap of being in and around it over the course of the next couple of seasons and not establishing themselves as a middle-of-the-road Premiership club that, we all thought they were going to do last season. We thought they were likely to be able to do this season. As Rodri says, Europe has absolutely killed them. What we've also seen that there's been sides that stay there, languishing in that bottom four or five, six, and they just get killed by by 1,000 paper cuts over a couple of seasons. And as I said, I don't really want that to happen to Burnley.
Well, you mentioned Cardiff there, Rob. And Rod, I know that Neil Warnock is one of these managers who in the last few years of their career, and we know that he's loving life in the Premier League. It's a big win at Leicester, especially given the fact that Leicester won their last two games against Chelsea and City.
Yeah, it's a massive win. I don't know how he keeps on doing it, because, you know, with the squad he's got as well, but, you know, when he does get teams together and he does keep things very simple on the training ground, and, you know, he's just reaping the rewards of that. It's just hopefully that they can keep it going. But it's going to be very, very difficult. I fear for him, come to the end of the season, they'll be bare bones if they don't bring someone in January. But, yeah, so far, if you asked him, would he take this position now at the start of the league, he would have snapped your hand off. But, yeah, he just needs to keep it going, but it's going to be very difficult.
What do you make of that Camarasa guy? Because no one really knew much about him until the beginning of this season. He's really holding it tight for him at the moment, isn't he?
Yeah, he's doing very well. He's that little bit of spark that they need, and, you know, hopefully they can keep it fit and find a couple more gems like that in January, because, like I say, they'll need them.
Yeah, that's a point. Well, Burnley's win was Southampton's loss, literally, because Southampton lost to City, another team that's been struggling as of late. Jan, we kind of thought City would struggle today. They didn't really, second half especially. They're back in the title hunt, obviously. So, where do you see it going for them now?
Who are we talking about, City or Southampton?
City.
This might sound a bit premature, but if Liverpool beat City on Thursday, I think it's over, to be honest. I think City will concede the title, and they'll probably concentrate more on winning the Champions League than winning the league. You know, as for Liverpool, obviously, if they beat City, what is that going to do to their confidence? Their confidence is high as it is, and if they beat the champions, then I only see one winner. I didn't think City will struggle today still, to be honest with you. I fancy them to win. Considering the two results they've had lately, they had to show character. And if they've got any chance of retaining the title, they had to win today. It was a professional performance. They deserve to win, even though Southampton should have had a penalty with Ward-Prowse. If they get that, they score, it could be a different game. But again, it all hinders down to Thursday now with that big game.
That's right. And you mentioned that penalty appeal for Southampton. Can you imagine if VAR was in play? I mean, there was the West Ham one where they could have had one the other day, and then there's today. Yeah. So I'm sure that...
Yeah, if VAR would have been there, that would have definitely been given. They would have reviewed it. And yeah, well, like I keep saying, we're going to see it next year, so it's going to happen.
Well, look, City were a bit lucky with that second goal. I know the Sterling shot took a bit of a deflection, and Aguero's header was fantastic. Rod, I know the Southampton manager made a few changes. I don't know whether it's the fact that he probably thought that City would beat them, so they're saving some players their energy for the future games. I don't think Southampton will go down, because they're just playing so well at the moment, and they've got players that are obviously playing for the manager. Do you see them struggling for the rest of the season, or will they bounce back?
Well, the new manager seems to brought a new lease of life for him. So I always thought it was going to be difficult for Southampton to come the run of games that they had in to play City. You know, it was always going to be difficult for him. And yeah, it didn't help the sending off as well. But yeah, it was always going to be difficult. And I still think they'll be okay, because the manager, like I say, he's come in and they've got some decent players there. They've got some goals in him, even though Shane Long is not a great goal scorer. Danny Ings will get you a goal, and Charlie Austin knows when that is. So they've got goals, and I think they'll be okay. Like I say, it's going to be a struggle. It's going to be a struggle between three of them: Southampton, Burnley, Cardiff, possibly Newcastle. But with the experience Rafa Benitez, I expect him to get out of it. So yeah, it's going to be difficult, but I think Southampton will be okay, especially with the change that they've made with... You know, it wasn't my fault, Matt Hughes.
Rob, how concerning is it for City that they failed to keep a clean sheet in each of their last 10 competitive matches? I mean, your boys have only conceded 8 all season in the league.
Yeah, it's certainly... well, they set such amazingly high standards last season that you look at it and you go, wow, hang on a minute, this is not quite what we... You know, as I said, the standards they expect. I'm always of the opinion that there's a mistake in Kyle Walker. Fernandinho has been a brilliant player for Manchester City, but he's coming to the end of it. And he's been, they've experimented with playing Stones as a holding midfielder. And, like, you know, it's that difficult thing where they're having that problem with the left back. Zinchenko played there again today. They played Delph there. And obviously Mendy's injured again. And it's not so much that that they look like they're going to... It's that thing where you just feel like you're going to get a chance against them these days. I was a bit disappointed with Southampton today. When I saw the team and I saw that Ings and Armstrong and Redmond weren't playing, it's one of those where I sat there and go like, yeah, I think they're just going to give up the points here a little bit. Mm. What concerns me with... What would concern me if I was a City supporter is that... They just have, brilliant players that they can bring in. You can swap the players around. That's fine when you're doing it with Silver 1 and Silver 2. It's fine when you're doing it with Sané and Sterling and Mahrez. But when you're doing it at the back, the stability just doesn't seem to be there. And I literally cannot put my finger on it, but... They just, as I said, there just seems to be a mistake in them. They'll give you a chance that last season they weren't doing. There doesn't seem to be that laser focus. And of course, it's hard to sustain that kind of laser focus. I think Laporte is a fantastic player. But every once in a while, when they put Otamendi in against him, alongside him, they're not quite as complimentary, perhaps, as Laporte and Stones are, or Laporte and company are. That means that I don't expect Otamendi to play against Liverpool anyway. So, but it's hard to put your finger on it. There was just as an aside, you know how we all have that thing where a friend of a friend knows a guy who knows a bloke who knows somebody that's, you know, that kind of thing. What I was told from our friend, who will remain nameless, and it then got repeated on a Liverpool podcast this week, curiously enough, is that last season City were on their very best behaviour in the changing rooms because the cameras were everywhere, and this season there's no cameras and they're not quite so readily focused and on the ball as they were last season. Mm-hmm. How true that is, I don't know, but it's certainly something that I can see, you know, like I can see it happening. Everyone, not every week, but you see it every once in a while. That the focus, the clarity, the communication just doesn't seem to be there like it was last season.
Mm. Well, maybe we might see a documentary about City's capitulation.
Say that again.
I said maybe we might see a documentary on City's capitulation.
Well, if you've watched the documentary, the most fascinating episode is the one before last, when he has to play Liverpool twice in a week and United in the middle. And I see a Pep Guardiola riddled with doubt.
Mm-hmm.
I see, I'm not saying the wheels are coming off, but or anything like that, of course not. But you see a man that's questioning himself and questioning his team. I think it's really hard to try and sustain it. I mean, United are the last team that were able to retain the title. We were all very happy to throw huge plaudits at City last year, and by and large, they were very well merited. I am still of the opinion that City would have won the Champions League were it not that they faced Liverpool in the semi-finals. The only team that could knock City out, in my opinion, were Liverpool over two legs. I think that if they'd have played Real or Juve, City probably would have got there. But as I said, it's very, very difficult to sustain it. Once you become a champion, it's really, really hard to keep that focused.
I just think it's fine margin sometimes as well, Rob. Yeah. And I'll tell you what I mean about that. When Arsenal went unbeaten in the season that they did, Ruud van Nistelrooy had a 94th minute penalty to beat them. And, you know, not their confidence.
You're going to mention what the Mahrez penalty, aren't you?
Sorry?
You're going to mention the Mahrez penalty, aren't you?
I am, yeah. I'm just talking about fine margins sometimes. City, for me, probably deserve to beat Liverpool at Anfield. If Mahrez puts that away, Liverpool are not unbeaten. You don't know what that does to Liverpool's confidence.
Yeah.
City with that run, carry on winning, go and get a result at Anfield, and it could be a different ball game.
Yeah.
So I just think sometimes, you know, it's not a little thing, Mahrez missing a penalty, but the margin in football. And as we saw with United, Arsenal went unbeaten. United faded away. I'm not saying City will fade away, but it was like a month ago that City would be 7 points behind Liverpool. Nobody thought that.
No.
That's true. And also, I mean, what you also got to bear in mind is that summer that Arsenal went the whole season unbeaten, 2003, they actually bought a new goalkeeper, didn't they? A half-decent one at that as well.
They bought Jens Lehmann, didn't it?
That's right, and Liverpool signed Alisson. So, yeah, more parallels there. It's scary. Absolutely scary.
He's been brilliant for us, guys. He really has. He's an absolute joy to watch. He made that mistake against Leicester, but his delivery of his distribution of the ball is absolutely magnificent. He pinged the ball in against Arsenal the other day that sets up the for the penalty. It's that wonderful thing. Honestly, we Stan and I have talked about this at great length about having a goalkeeper that is just willing to pipe up and shout at his players is so refreshing as a Liverpool supporter. We haven't had one of them since Pepe Reina.
Rob, do you actually think he's done a lot at Liverpool? And I'm talking about
Alisson.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. I really, really do.
I personally believe, I think in the games that I've seen him, he's probably made one save in a game, if that, maybe two the most. I don't think I've seen him tested as much because, you know, Liverpool only conceded 7-8 goals all season.
That's fair. Listen, I mean, by and large, if you've scored against Liverpool this season, it's probably been because we've made a mistake. It's not like we've just done away with making mistakes. We're still making mistakes. But there's something about him. He's just so much more commanding in and around the box. We used to literally shit our pants whenever anybody got a corner against us. We don't do that anymore. Having a goalkeeper that's willing to come and get the ball and is built like a brick shit house and is really physically commanding and looks it has done wonders for the confidence. It really, really has. And that's not to say he's not going to make mistakes. Of course he is, and he has. But at the same time, he is such an enormous, enormous upgrade on what we've had previously.
Yeah, that
it's an enormous upgrade. And the thing is, as well, is if you're on the cop and he makes a mistake, you might want to go, oh, bloody hell, we need to go and get a new goalkeeper. Well, who is there? There's nobody you can go and get that will be an upgrade on Alisson. And you can say about the lad at Atletico Madrid, that's an argument you can have, but he wouldn't play to our style of football, you know? Alisson's great. He's a natural fit for the way that Liverpool want to play football. So he has, you know, it's one of those things where it was a massive outlay of money, and I was a little bit sceptical, but it's the proof of the pudding's in the eating. And now we've had like 5 or 6 months of him, you can see, and it just gives us all an enormous lift from considering what happened, you know, in Kiev.
But it just shows as well, when you spend 150 million on two players, how it can improve your defence.
Well, absolutely. I mean, guys, we all remember that quote from Klopp. He said, if you give me 200 million, I'd spend it very differently.
Yeah.
And he has. He bought a holding midfielder, he bought a central defender, and he bought a goalie. So,
case closed.
Huh?
Case closed, I said.
Yeah.
Right, let's move on to our final game. And Man United made it 3 wins on the bounce under Solskjaer, beating Bournemouth 4-1. Pogba scored twice. Surprise, surprise. We said it the other day, Rod, didn't we? You know, is it a coincidence that he's starting to put in performances now that Jose's gone? In fact, he's the first United player to score at least twice in consecutive Premier League appearances since Wayne Rooney in December 2012. He's not a bad player, is he?
No, but we knew this anyway. It was just the consistency that we didn't see from him. But, you know, if you get a happy Paul Pogba, you get him happy, and you see the results. He was brilliant today again. His passing, his work rate, he was all over the show. And then there's obviously his two goals and his assist. It just doesn't. We've seen it before, haven't we, with Jose Mourinho? But something's obviously happened, and Ollie's come in and changed it totally. Done it at 360, and everyone's up again and playing very, very well. You know, if he keeps that going, then we will definitely be pushing for top four anyway.
100%. Rob, what do you make of this whole Pogba situation anyway? Because, you know, you and I, we haven't actually spoken about this before. And as a Liverpool fan, you must be laughing your ass off. But, you know, it's a bit weird.
I agree with what Rodri said, to be honest with you. Like, nobody will ever be able to doubt Pogba as a player. I'm actually very... very pleased. If I was United supporter, I'd be really, really happy with the amount of goals he's scoring, because he's never really been a player that scores a lot of goals previously when he was at Juve, and that's gold dust. Finding or being able to create or a player evolving into becoming a goal scoring midfielder these days is absolutely gold dust. Trying to find midfielders like Lampard and Gerrard or Scholes that used to get you 20 goals a season, they're not really around. So Pogba's ability on the ball is always going to make him a star player. He has a star name, as we all know. What's been great from what I've seen is that there's just so many more willing runners around him. Lingard is, you know, I've always been an advocate of Lingard. He offers him so much more. He'll just do a lot. And he does a fair bit of running for Pogba as well, let's be honest. But Lingard's been great. Martial looks like a completely different player. And Rashford will run for days as well. So when you give him some options, and you know, they let the handbrake off, you're seeing the Pogba that we know is always, you know, what he's capable of doing. You know, it is interesting to see what will happen in the future, boys. Like, you know, going out and buying players that will facilitate Pogba's abilities, complement him, because wherever he's been, be it with France or be it with Juve, they built the team around him. He's had a fair few water carriers around him that do a lot of his work for him. Bring out the best in your star player. I don't have a problem with that, you know. So fair play to the boy. I just hope that whoever the next manager is, he'll offer the same level of consistency that we've seen over the last couple of weeks for the rest of this season. That it's not just going to be like a couple of weeks bubble of showing up and doing the business, and it's going to fade out over the course of the through to May or whenever the next manager's announced.
No, I agree, mate. Jan, tell me something. It's all well and good, you know, seeing us score 3 goals, 4 goals, 5 goals. But defensively, we're still shambolic. I think only Fulham have had less clean sheets than us this season. It's got to be a cause for concern, surely.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. I mean, I think we've kept 2 clean sheets all season. And, you know, we always knew that we've got problems at the back, and we didn't address them in the summer. So I don't think we'll address them in January. I think we'll go with what we've got until the end of the season, see what we finish, and then if it's Ollie, if it's the next manager, then you know, hopefully they'll have the money and address the situation. I'm just going to quickly point on Pogba, and I don't know what you lot, you know, your views on this. For me, I feel he's cheated the club, Pogba. He's all good now that the manager's gone and he's working well, etc., blah, blah, blah. But as a professional, as the club pays wages, the fans support him, where's he been for the night month? You know, the last 9 months. Where's his work rate been when Mourinho was there? It doesn't matter if you like the manager or not. He's got a duty of care for the club that pays his wages, for the fans that watch him, to produce the performances he's been doing for the last two, three games. So as much as I am loving his performances at the moment, at the end of the day, I support the club. You know, I'm not too, you know, overly joyed because for me, he's cheated us. I don't know, that's my opinion on that.
Yeah, but we had this conversation, I can't remember whether it was on the show or whether it was off the air, but we were saying, well, in the time, okay, forget the last three games under Solskjaer. Can you think of five standout performances of Pogba's since he rejoined United? And we could think of the second half against City, the game against Everton, and that was pretty much it. We couldn't think of five standout performances, but here we go, three games in, and he's
had two standout performances.
Well, if not three, because he got two assists in the Cardiff game as well.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. So, you know, yeah, it's all good well to say Mourinho was the problem. And if you want to judge the last three games to Mourinho's reign, yeah, maybe Mourinho was the problem. Maybe he set them up too defensively. And it's what I was crying about all this time, the fact that I didn't like his native style. And now all of a sudden we've got an attacking manager who's letting the players play. You know, it's flowing. But, you know, regardless of the tactics, regardless of if you get along with the manager or not, he's still got a duty of care as one of the most expensive players in the world, highest paid wages, etc., blah, 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 to go out there and perform for himself and for the fans. And he's not done that. Now, all of a sudden, a new manager comes in and he's a world beater. So, you know, if we had a Pogba like this firing for the last 6 months and the other players performing as well as they have been in the last two, three games, then maybe we could have challenged Liverpool for a title or be in a better position that we're in. So, you know, it's for me, it's still not all rosy there. I've got a few issues with the players there.
Rod, you know me, I've been Rashford's biggest critic over the past couple of seasons. He's shutting me up at the moment. He has an absolutely blinding game. The first goal, the assist, was absolutely superb. Are we going to see the best of him?
You'd think so. We've seen it so far since Ollie's been here. He's expressing himself. He's trying different things in the right areas. And, you know, with his pace and the skill he's got, you know, like you say, that first goal was absolutely brilliant. And he just left the two defenders for dead. And Nathan Aki's a decent defender. And the other kid, he's just left for dead. And basically a tap in for Pogba. But, yeah, you'd hope so. And, you know, what Pogba's got now with these three in front of him, it's just the runners, like Robbie was saying before, the runners have got off him. It's just mouthwatering for him because they all want to get forward. The fullbacks are high up, so he's got a lot of options. Plus, he seems to have a new lease of life now. I kind of agree with Jan, but for now, you need to get him on side and get the club going in the right direction, and which he's doing, and you know, and we're seeing the rewards, and he's getting his goals, and we're seeing the top player he is. But yeah, he still leaves a bit of taste in his mouth, really, with Paul Pogba. But you know, you can't deny the quality he's got.
The thing is, to be fair, look, it wasn't just Pogba that wasn't putting in a shift, was it? I mean, there's a lot of players that let them.
No, it wasn't. But it was the public arguments, on the trading ground, you know, the other little bits of stuff.
He was the figurehead for the argument, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was just kind of the bad egg, and you know, obviously the others followed him. And you know, you only need one in a football club, and they can just spread like wildfire if they're.
For me as well, Rod, it was the photo when Mourinho got sacked on Instagram or whatever.
That was a scheduled tweet, mate. That was a scheduled Instagram post. It was scheduled. It wasn't. It wasn't.
Yeah.
It just,
where I work. Marcus Rashford's best friend works there from school. He's his best mate, and he told me that at the time when it come out, he said that wasn't nothing to do with Mourinho.
It's a coincidence, massive coincidence.
Yeah.
So, but I mean,
if it was, then why did they take it down?
Because they knew people would have kicked off about it. That's why.
Because they shouldn't have done it in the first place.
And if they take it down, then they think, well, we took it down because it was something to do with that. It was nothing to do with anything to do with Mourinho.
Right or wrong, taking it down was the correct thing to do because whether they were best mates or they hated each other's guts, he still is gaffer and he still has to show him some respect. So I agree with you guys. In my opinion, it was an accident, an unscheduled, a scheduled tweet or a scheduled post. But to take it down was the right thing to do because you still have to show your gaffer some respect.
Yeah, it just the whole situation seems like history being rewritten. We had it with David Beckham, didn't we? Fell out with Ferguson, but Ferguson won that one because he got rid of Beckham, and Beckham was a massive asset to United from a marketing standpoint on this occasion.
But this bit, I think that was a bit different because David Beckham always performed, always gave 100%, and always was a top player. Pogba's not been that. It was different things with Beckham. It was the outside stuff that maybe Pogba's got as well. He didn't put up with that, and he was out.
He got rid of Yapstam as well, didn't he, boys? When he wrote that book, he was gone in weeks, wasn't he? You remember that? Yeah, that he wrote
but it's reported that I actually know that he regretted that, and he shouldn't have done that, but... You know, he makes mistakes as well. Even though he's great.
He's no angel, let's be honest. Come on, let's be honest. We don't want to start having conversations about horses, do we, boys?
Rock of Gibraltar. Yeah, took the words out of my mouth. Well, I don't know. As a United fan, I'm very pleased to see the way that things are going at the moment. Again, defensively, we're not great. But, you know, there's an understanding there with the full-backs getting forward. You know, I saw Ashley Young in a centre-forward position in the second half. Absolutely ridiculous, you know. And it's just this confidence that goes through the club. You know, Rob, you guys had it when Klopp came in, the new manager bounce, and it's continued. Other teams have had it. But I think with United, we've got so... You know, we love this whole romanticism. You know, whenever a new manager's about to come in, they say, is Cantona going to come back in some capacity? Schmeichel's piping up saying, I want to be director of football.
The class of 92 get linked with every single job whenever... it could be Kitman, and they want to give the job to Scholesy because of who he is. And I'm not really sure that that's the answer to it. The thing for me is, it reminds me of the situation Liverpool found themselves in when they got rid of Roy Hodgson. And we brought King Kenny back, and we played great football. We lost the FA Cup final. We won the League Cup, I think, if I remember that. That's the last time we won a trophy.
FA Cup was winning Chelsea in the final.
They felt like they had to give him the job. You know, they brought such a bounce back. They got all the supporters back on side, and they felt like they had to give Kenny the job. And I don't really think that that's what they, in the grand scheme of things, that's what they wanted to do. But in the meantime, I don't think you guys are going to find yourself in a situation where you're going to get to the middle of February, you beat PSG, and everyone's calling to give Ollie the job full time.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah,
so just, true. As you said, you've had a rough time of it, lads. Enjoy it. It's the only thing I can say that from experience myself.
Of course.
Rough time. You're playing some good stuff. You're getting some wins. Enjoy it while you can.
Yeah. And, Arsenal are only 3 points ahead of us when they were 11 points ahead a few weeks ago.
Go on a 2,783 game-winning run against Carabag and Brentford and Blackpool.
But you see, this is the thing, Rob. At the time, I said that, they're one loss away from a bad patch. And here it is.
Yeah.
Okay, granted, they've got injuries and whatnot, but I think... That unbeaten run took out a lot of them physically and mentally. And don't forget, they only kept one clean sheet in those 22 games. So again, it just says it all, really. But
yeah, I've been on the show before with you boys, and I've said it before, and I'll say it again: the good managers learn by getting things wrong. Emre's learning. We know he's a good manager. We know he has good players. He has pushed a lot of those players a lot harder than I think he had to, particularly in Europe. He's learning. The big problem at Arsenal is that they have to try to inspire players to come there for him. That means either having to pay very big wages or finish in the top four. So it'll be interesting to me, boys, what will happen around middle of February. Arsenal and Chelsea start taking that Europa League very seriously.
Mm. Fair enough. Well, look, before we wrap things up, Rod, tell me about Eddie Howe, because Bournemouth are 12th. They're on 26 points. They're what? 6 points? Sorry, 11 points ahead of the drop zone. I don't think that they will be in a relegation dogfight, but They are looking over their shoulders. Brighton are on 25 and Palace are, I know they're only 7 points behind them, but 7 points is nothing in the grand scheme of things at the moment. Are they going to dip even more because they're really, really struggling at the moment?
They are, but you know, they've not got a massive squad. The Christmas period, always, you always pick up little niggly injuries and fatigue, and they're obviously going through that at the minute with lack of players and players out injured. So I still think, you know, 26 points halfway through the season, they only really need to get another 14 points. So what's that? Another 3 or 4 wins in what, 19 games? I think they'll be able to do that, especially at home. The teams have got to play against. So, you know, it's a blip for them. It's a blip. But they're still doing fantastic well. It's Bournemouth. You know, they're nearly out of business 10 years ago and now they're in the Premier League. So you just put things into perspective and he's still doing a fantastic job. Even though, you know, at the minute he's leaking goals for fun. You know, I'm sure he'll sort that out. And maybe bring someone in January. You never know.
I think that's what they need. All right, gents, I think that's it for our Premier League review. There's just one more little thing I want to ask you guys. Your player of the year so far and your signing of the year so far.
Oh, well, that's a good question. That is a good question, you know. The player of the season so far.
For me, the player of the season has got to be Mo Salah, I think.
He was your £10 million fantasy football.
The calendar year or thus far this season?
This season. I was saying, Rod, Salah was your £10 million signing in our Fantasy World Cup team, wasn't it?
this season. That's a good question, though.
I think Son at Tottenham for me.
Yeah?
I think he's been fantastic. He's definitely top three. I think they're going to miss him next month, that's for sure.
For me, it's got Virgil van Dijk.
I was going to say that, yeah. 100%.
I'm going to throw in a curveball then, and obviously I'm biased because I'm a Liverpool supporter, and Stel also knows that I have the biggest man crush on this guy. Gini Wijnaldum.
Yeah.
Gini Wijnaldum doesn't get any credit, doesn't score any goals, and is just the fulcrum of our side. When Liverpool signed Fabinho and Naby Keita, most people, you know, when you do your fantasy team and things like that, nobody had Gini Wijnaldum in Liverpool's midfield this season. In fact, some people were talking about they should sell him. I am delighted that they haven't. The heartbeat of our team, a genuine leader. As I said, he's not Zabby, he's not Stevie Gerrard, Mascherano, he's just really, really good.
I'm just annoyed because the last two midfielders or attacking midfielders Liverpool signed, Coutinho and Wijnaldum, I said when they signed them, these are half-decent players. You really going to get a tune out of these guys. And I was right, and it's bloody Liverpool. Great. Fantastic.
I mean, signing of the season, I would have said Torreira until yesterday.
Yeah. Well, he got his pants pulled down this weekend, let's be honest. He has been pretty good for Arsenal.
For me, it's Guendouzi. I think he's been absolutely phenomenal for Arsenal this year.
Yeah, Guendouzi's been good as well. That was strange that they left him out on yesterday. And you know what? Another thing that you lot touched about, I mean, I'm going away from the subject, Lacazette. I mean, Wenger didn't trust him in big games last season, did he? Left him on the bench.
Let me ask you this, guys. No, go on, Rodri, you go first, mate.
What's that for? What?
I thought you were going to speak. Sorry. We all know about that thing about guys coming over from France and it taking a while. Not with every player, but there's been a large glut of players that have played in France and then they come to the Premiership and the pace of the game's so much quicker and they're not really on the ball. And Thierry Henry's an example of that. They couldn't quite, that first season, he was at Arsenal, he struggled, didn't he? But is it that thing with Lacazette that he's not quite just on the money just yet, or is it another one of these crazy things that he's got to deal where they've got to give him 10 grand every time he plays 20 minutes, like they did with Oxlade-Chamberlain? What do you think? Do you rate him? I mean, like,
I rate Lacazette. I think he's a proper striker. I think he's give him a chance. Lacazette will put the ball in the back of the net for me. I touched on Aubameyang last week. I apart from him scoring goals, I think he offers nothing. And even like yesterday, the stats
were saying. He couldn't get the game, could he?
Yeah, like 12 touches in the whole game. I think that's pathetic. But I think, for me, Lacazette should start. That's my opinion.
Rod, it seems that no manager knows how to play him, which is weird.
I don't know why, because he's the only one seeing to score goals every time he plays. Yep. If you're going to play Aubameyang, if you don't put Aubameyang on the left or the right, you put Lacazette on the left or the right. Yeah. You accommodate him. He's a goal scorer, and they need goals, and you know his record proves that. So yeah, it's a strange one. He must be a shy trainer. I don't know.
Gents, what about Felipe Anderson as the signing of the season?
Yeah,
so, I wouldn't go that far.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
The reason why he's at West Ham, isn't there, guys? And you know, no disrespect to him, when he's been good, he's been very good. But when he's bad, he's bloody awful.
Yeah, but we're talking about the impact he's made, isn't it? All right, yeah, he's at West Ham, but he's been one of the signings of the season because he's been successful.
Yeah, I'd have to go with the keeper for Liverpool, to be honest.
Yeah, he's obviously made a huge difference.
Yeah,
it's a tricky one to say, isn't it, for the time being?
It really is. It's hard.
It is a tricky one, yeah. I don't really want to say a keeper, really, but yeah, he's made a massive difference. So him and Van Dijk have just completely changed. They've done a 360 with that defence. That defence a year ago would looked shocking, but now with a keeper that's a top class keeper, and obviously Van Dijk with his calm influence and his qualities, totally changed that defence.
Well, I think Madison's been another one at Leicester.
It's a good shout.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, good shout. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's not a signing, but I like the lad. Is it Gibbs White at Wolves? The young lad.
Yeah.
I like him. I'd love to see more of Hudson-Odoi at Chelsea.
He's going by Munich.
Well, who can blame him if he does? Want to get some football in his legs, doesn't he?
Yeah.
But they're talking about signing Pulisic, aren't they, at Chelsea?
Pulisic, that's in the summer, apparently.
Yeah. Well, I think that means that Hazard's probably going to say bye bye. Can you see him having a fresh start at Real Madrid, and then they bring in Jose Mourinho?
I called it the other day. I said them two are going to be at Real Madrid next summer.
Because that's going to go down great, isn't it? You know, it's that funny thing. You know, we were talking about. I know you don't want to wrap the show up, Stel, but it's that funny thing about Jose's brand of football and his culture inside of his team. That you know, you've got a player like Hazard who gets Player of the Season award, and all he's heard for other players, you know. Sorry, say that again. Hello, sorry.
No, Karen.
No, go on, mate.
I apologise. Sorry, boys. He wins Player of the Season, and all he's heard from Jose all season is, they hate us. Everybody hates us. Everybody hates Chelsea. They fucking hate us. And then he shows up the next day, and he's got this big trophy. He goes, Gaffer, everyone seems to like me. He goes, no. They hate us. No. This doesn't work. This isn't how this works in my mind. You get that thing where... not to say he rested on his laurels, but you get that thing where everything that you're told by your manager and your senior management team and all the coaches is directed in one direction to say, we will beat you, we will beat other teams because they hate us so much that we just want to stick a finger in their ear and, you know.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, Hazard's going, actually, they seem to like me. You know, so you stop believing in what you're being told day in and day out, and that's where you get that shift in attitude, and you stop. You know, that's like perhaps one element of why Jose has to do 3 years at a club and then push off, because people get tired of hearing what he has to say. You know, and that message and the way that he builds his team. You know, that core.
Rob, wasn't Hazard one of the players that down tools for him at Chelsea?
Yes, he was. Yes, he was. Yes, so, he was. And let's be fair. Let's be fair, guys. He wasn't the only one. Fabregas, Costa, David Luiz, Willian, all of them were really, really poor in that last season. And yet, curiously enough, he wanted to buy Willian and bring him to Manchester United with him. So... can bygones be bygones? Well, I guess we'll see in the summer. I'm with you, Stel. I think that Jose will end up back at Real Madrid because they're certainly not going to have him at Bayern Munich.
No chance. Right, gents, that is the end of our show. Thank you ever so much for your time and for coming on. Before I let you guys go, Twitter handles. Robbie?
Yeah, you can find me at Robbie Richmond, Robbie with a Y. I do follow back, and I don't really care who you support. I will have a chat with you because I am very, very boring.
Fair enough. Yan?
Yannickus J.
Rob?
At Rod James Giggs.
Superb, gents. We're on Twitter at Shoot the Defence. We have a Facebook group page. We also have a predictions site called StealthSecretSource.co.uk. Only two wrong at the weekend. So yeah, until next time.
Hey, come on, Stel, I need to win some money, man.
Well, subscribe and you'll be all right.
I have, but I haven't won any money yet. I need to pay for my mum's knee operation.
High stakes, mate. High stakes. Great stuff. Well, I said Happy New Year on the last show, so I'm going to say it again. Happy New Year, guys. So until next time, take care.